You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Sunday, March 12, 2023. Comeback Song, Part 2. Frenzy of Eagle Ford M&A continues as E&Ps enter, expand, or exit. Published by Housley Carr. The wave of M&A activity in South Texas apparently hasn't crested yet. Over the past couple months, Chesapeake Energy announced two deals totaling $2.825 billion that will almost complete its planned departure from the Eagle Ford and signal UK-based INEOS's arrival in the basin and a more than doubling of Wildfire Energy's production there. Just as important, Western Canada's Baytex Energy a few days ago unveiled a $2.5 billion plan to acquire Ranger Oil, a pure-play Eagle Ford E&P, and thereby triple its South Texas production and gain its first operating capability in the U.S. and international interest in the basin doesn't end there. Spanish energy giant Repsol, which had previously acquired the share of an Eagle Ford partnership held by Norway's Equinor, recently bought basin assets held by Japan's Inpex. How's that for multinational M&A? In today's RBN blog, we discuss the latest round of E&P acquisitions and sales in South Texas, where production has been on the rebound. Back in the first half of the 2010s, the Eagle Ford was in its glory, duking it out with the Permian and the offshore Gulf of Mexico for the number one spot in crude oil production and with the then preeminent Haynesville for top honors in natural gas output. But the mid-decade crash in oil and gas prices hit the Eagle Ford harder than any other U.S. production area, and it didn't rebound the way those other basins did, for a variety of reasons. Lately, however, M&A activity in the shale play has been surging, suggesting that the Eagle Ford may finally be on the verge of a serious, sustained comeback. As we said last fall in Part 1, crude oil and natural gas production in the Eagle Ford peaked at about 1.7 million barrels per day and 7.4 BCF per day, respectively, in the mid-2010s, then sagged, bounced around a bit, and, like almost every basin, took a dive with COVID. Over the past few months, however, oil and gas production in South Texas have been showing new signs of life, averaging about 1.2 million barrels per day and, a near record, 7.3 BCF per day, respectively, in February. In that blog, we also discuss the slew of M&A activity occurring in South Texas, including Marathon Oil's $3 billion purchase of Ensign Natural Resources Eagle Ford assets, Devon Energy's $1.8 billion acquisition of Validus Energy, and a number of smaller deals by smaller players. As for what's driving these transactions, we suggested, among other things, one, that more nimble and aggressive producers are increasingly looking outside the Permian to expand their production portfolios. Two, that while the Eagle Ford is no Permian from a money-making perspective, wells in South Texas can still be cash cows. And three, that the Eagle Ford is only a stone's throw from Corpus Christi's refineries and crude oil and LNG export terminals. The more recent deals we're focusing on in today's blog add a couple of other drivers to the mix. For example, Chesapeake Energy's agreements to sell the northern half of its Eagle Ford assets to Wildfire Energy for $1.425 billion and the southern half to INEOS Energy, a unit of INEOS, the multinational chemicals company, for $1.4 billion were spurred by Chesapeake's strategy to focus on the Haynesville and Marcellus. As we'll get to, Wildfire's planned purchase is part of an ongoing effort to build scale in the Eagle Ford, and INEOS is seeking to gain its first foothold in the U.S. oil and gas sector. Let's discuss the deals one by one. Privately held Wildfire announced in mid-January that it has agreed to acquire about 377,000 net acres and 1,350 wells in the Brazos Valley region in the northeastern reaches of the Eagle Ford Basin. In Q3 2022, the data available when the deal was announced, the wells were producing 27,700 barrels of oil equivalent per day, or 27.7 thousand BOE per day, with 85% of that in the form of liquids, crude oil, condensate, and NGLs. Net proved reserve associated with the acreage totaled just under 97 million BOE at the end of last year. With the acquisition, which is expected to close later this month, Wildfire will operate about 2,000 wells on 600,000 mostly contiguous acres in the basin. Wildfire did not reveal what its post-closing production would total, but it's clearly becoming a significant player in the Eagle Ford. Formed in 2019 with funding from Warburg Pincus, Kane Anderson and Company Management, Wildfire in August 2021 built upon its initial holdings in the basin by acquiring Hawkwood Energy and its 160,000 net acres, 360 wells and 15,000 BOE per day of production in a deal valued at about $650 million. Wildfire followed that up in March 2022 with a deal, price not disclosed, to acquire Maryland America Energy and its 45,000 net acres, 200 wells and 3,200 BOE per day of production. There's an interesting backstory here. Wildfire is headed by the former management team at Wild Horse Resource Development, which by 2018 had amassed 420,000 net acres in the Brazos Valley and was producing 47,000 BOE per day there. Eager at that time to expand its Eagle Ford holdings, Chesapeake acquired Wild Horse in February 2019 in a stock and cash deal valued at nearly $4 billion. Wild Horse investors ended up with a 45% stake in Chesapeake until its bankruptcy filing in July 2020. Now, Wildfire, led former Wild Horse execs, is buying the vast majority of the acreage that Chesapeake acquired in its Wild Horse deal 4 years ago. Chesapeake's $1.4 billion deal with INEOS, which is expected to close this spring, involves the sale of about 172,000 net acres and 2,300 wells in the southwestern portion of the Eagle Ford, with most of those assets located in South Texas's Dimmit, LaSalle, and McMullen counties. In Q4 2022, the wells produced an average of 36,000 BOE per day, 81% liquids, which works out to about 30,000 barrels per day of liquids and 40 million cubic feet per day of gas. As of December 31st of last year, the proved reserves associated with the acreage totaled about 144 million BOE. As we said, the purchase marks INEOS' entry into U.S. oil and gas production. Chesapeake indicated during its February 21st earnings call that it will be aiding INEOS in the creation of an operating organization. In a statement, INEOS said the acquisition is part of the company's strategy to build a global portfolio fit for the energy transition that will include a mix of crude oil, NGLs, natural gas and other, lower carbon energy sources such as hydrogen. The deal is also another example of an end user acquiring upstream assets in the U.S., like Osaka Gas's 2019 purchase of Sabine Oil and Gas in the Haynesville. In interesting developments that may relate to its Eagle Ford acquisition, INEOS in December 2022 agreed to buy 1.4 million metric tons per annum, or 1.4 million tons per annum, or about 185 million cubic feet per day, of Gulf Coast-sourced LNG from Sempra Energy's Port Arthur LNG project and is developing an ethane-only steam cracker in Antwerp, Belgium, that is slated to come online in 2026. Chesapeake has indicated that it expects to use a significant portion of the proceeds from the Wildfire and INEOS deals to pay down debt and increase returns to shareholders. The company noted, again in its recent earnings call, that it is in talks with a number of interested parties regarding the prospective sale of Chesapeake's remaining assets in the Eagle Ford, which are located near the southwestern end of the basin and which produce about 21,000 barrels per day of liquids and 80 million cubic feet per day of gas. Next up, there is the plan by Calgary, Alberta-based Baytex Energy to acquire Houston-based Ranger Oil in a cash and stock transaction valued at $2.5 billion. Currently, more than two-thirds of Baytex's production is in Western Canada, with the rest coming from non-operated assets in the Eagle Ford's Karnes Trough area. The deal, which is expected to close in late spring, includes Ranger's 162,000 net acres, or 188,900 gross acres, in the Eagle Ford's crude oil window, mostly in Gonzales, Slovaca, and Fayette counties. Ranger's production averages 68.5 thousand BOE per day, with 72% of that in the form of light crude oil, 43 degrees API, and another 15% other liquids. That will be added to Baytex's production of 27,000 BOE per day, 59% crude, 18% other liquids, summing to 95.5 thousand BOE per day, with 68% of that light oil and 16% other liquids. Important to Baytex, whose current wells are operated by Marathon Oil, 86% of the wells it will be acquiring are operated by Ranger. That will enable Baytex to gain its first experience as an Eagle Ford operator. Baytex said the Ranger acquisition also will enhance its inventory in the Eagle Ford, with 741 net undrilled locations representing an inventory life of 12 to 15 years. A couple more things. First, Baytex said the deal will enable it to step up its direct shareholder returns to 50% of free cash flow, and that when it has whittled down its post-closing debt to $1.5 billion, about 1x total debt to EBITDA $50 per barrel WTI, it intends to increase shareholder returns to 75% of free cash flow. Finally, the acquisition of Ranger, with its relatively low greenhouse gas, or GHG intensity, Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions of 28 kilograms of carbon dioxide equivalent per BOE in 2021, compared to 54 kilograms per CO2e per BOE for Baytex that year, will allow the Baytex Ranger combo to reduce its GHG intensity by 16%, and thereby help it achieve its long-term ESG-related goals. And then there's Repsol. For several years, the Spanish energy giant had been a partner with Norway's Statoil, later renamed Equinor, in Eagleford oil and gas development. Then, in 2019, Repsol bought out Equinor's share for $325 million. The deal reflected Repsol's strategy to expand in the U.S. because of its extensive infrastructure and stable regulatory structure. Repsol is also active in the Marcellus and the offshore Gulf of Mexico. On February 1, Japan's Inpex announced that, as part of a broader strategic shift, it has sold its Eagleford assets, mostly in Karnes County, to Repsol for an undisclosed amount. Earlier this month, Repsol closed on the sale of a 25% ownership interest in its newly formed Repsol Upstream unit, which includes the company's Eagleford production assets, to Aike. So, as E&Ps of every stripe affirm or adjust their strategies, the Eagleford continues to see more than its share of M&A activity. Clearly, some producers still see promise in the South Texas play, which has had its ups and downs during the shale era, while others are putting their bets on other basins, Chesapeake being an obvious example. As we see it, there's a lot to like about the Eagleford, with its strong production economics and easy access to export markets. In our crude oil production forecast, which we shared in last week's The Price You Pay, we see production in the basin rising to 1.3 million barrels per day by early 2025 and inching up from there through 2028. That would keep it in the number 3 spot among U.S. production areas, behind the number 1 Permian and the number 2 Gulf of Mexico, and just ahead of the number 4 Bakken. Comeback Song was written by Darius Rucker, Casey Bethard, and Chris Stapleton. It appears as the second song on Darius Rucker's third studio album, Charleston, South Carolina, 1966. Released as the first single from the album in July 2010, it went to number 1 on the Billboard Hot Country Songs chart and number 37 on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart. It has been certified platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America, or RIAA. Personnel on the record were Darius Rucker, on lead vocals Gordon Mote, on Wurlitzer electric piano Michael Rhodes, on bass Pat Buchanan and JT Corenflos, on slide guitars Dan Dugmore, on steel guitar Shannon Forrest, on drums Eric Darkin, on percussion Ilya Toshinsky, on mandolin Brian Sutton, on acoustic guitar and Wes Hightower, on backing vocals. Charleston, South Carolina, 1966 was the third solo album and the second country music album from Rucker. The album was recorded in early 2010 at Capitol Nashville and produced by Frank Rogers. It was released in October 2010 and went to number 1 on the Billboard Top Country Albums chart and number 2 on the Billboard 200 Albums chart and has been certified gold by the RIAA. 3 singles were released from the LP. Darius Rucker is an American singer, guitarist, and songwriter. He first gained fame as the lead vocalist with the rock band Hootie and the Blowfish, which he founded with Mark Bryan, Jim Sonefeld, and Dean Felber in 1986 while all were students at the University of South Carolina. He released 5 studio albums and had 6 top 40 hits while with the band. In 2002, he released his first solo R&B album. Starting in 2008, Rucker has focused on country music. With the release of his first country music single Don't Think I Don't Think About It in 2008, he became the first black country music artist to have a number 1 single since Charley Pride in 1983. As a solo artist, he has released 7 studio albums, 1 compilation album, and 20 singles. Rucker has won 3 Grammy Awards and 2 CMA Awards. He still records and tours. Hootie and the Blowfish still occasionally perform live with Rucker and put on the annual Hootie Fest, with the next one to be held in Cancun, Mexico, in April 2023.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.